You're listening to TFM.
Want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners' discussion group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field, and we'll look forward to seeing you there.
Hey, everyone. I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Taking all these books?
I thought I'd take some light reading in case I got bored.
Well, hello and welcome to Literary Treks, TFM's dedicated Star Trek books and comics show. I am just one of your hosts, Casey Pettit, and with me, as usual, is Jonathan Cohn. Welcome, Jonathan.
Hello, I'm happy that we are completing this big series we've been working on all year since January.
Yeah, it's crazy. This book came out over the course, this series, the Gateway series, came out over the course of, 4 months?
Mm-hmm.
I think they had a couple books a month, and then here we are 9 months into it, and finally getting to the end. Yes, this is probably one of the longer series. I mean, there was, Literary Treks covered, the whole kind of, 24th century, post-DS9, post-Nemesis stuff, but it was kind of all over the place, and some of them as they were coming out. But this is kind of like the longest of legacy Star Trek novels that we've covered.
Yeah.
Well, before we do that, and not only that, we got a bunch of comics to talk about today. But let me tell everybody how to contact us. You can find all of our shows by going to our website, trek.fm. You can follow us on X and Instagram at trekfm. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. And while you're there, join our listeners-only group, the Babel Conference. Just go to the Facebook search field and type B-A-B-E-L, and it should come right up. We also have a dedicated Goodreads group for Literary Treks, which I finally started getting back into a little bit. So you could join us there and see the books we've read, what's coming up next. We've got some conversations in there, which have been pretty quiet, but we can definitely bring those back. Join the group and tell us what you're reading and tell us what you want to read. And if you'd like to support the network, please go to patreon.com/trekfm, where you can select from any number of tiers and support the network and all these shows that we've got coming to you. And if you've got one of the shows that you really like, please donate and be an associate producer like myself and Greg Rozier are for Literary Treks. And lastly, please give us a star rating and a written review on your podcatcher of choice. It's a great way to give feedback for us and also does something in those crazy algorithms to help other people find the show. Well, we are at the, as we're finishing one book series, we are finishing a comic series or almost finishing a comic series this week. We are actually coming to the end of the runs of the Star Trek and Star Trek Defiant lines from IDW. And this is the culminating kind of penultimate arc. And really, there's only one issue left after this, but this is the Lore War. This is what they've been leading up to since, was it Pleroma or one of those earlier arcs with Lore has finally led us here.
Yeah, and we have the 5-issue arc that, kind of goes between Defiant and the main Star Trek line. And then we had that one shot. And I'm glad that you numbered them for us and put them in the order because I read them because there's one character in here and I spent the whole time being like, I know this character from something. And then I got to the one shot and I saw the art style and I was like, oh, that's who that is. And so that was a fun realization.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, the setup, I guess, for this series, the Lore War, as we kind of came to a close in Star Trek and Star Trek Defiant was the universe was collapsing. All the different universes, the multiverse was collapsing, and Lore has now created a new universe in his image. He's using Data as like a almost kind of the hardware, the software, whatever you want to call it, you know, to run this thing. And we see a lot of familiar characters that we've seen throughout the series, but they're all kind of different, almost, yeah, almost like a mirror universe, but not, almost worse in some ways, like not worse, like bad people, but just worse in that, like, they're just subjects in this empire.
As this is not the first time I've seen this. I've seen, you know, in like Marvel and DC have done this with their characters. I know they did this with Doom in some of the animated series. I know they've done this with Lex Luthor and DC. So this concept is not particularly new. But what makes it so fun is getting to see how our characters are different. Like seeing Worf and Alexander being like a father-son commander duo was fun.
Finally.
Yeah, right. Yeah, a good father-son dynamic finally for them. And then also getting to see Kalis in was fun here.
Yeah.
I liked seeing him here.
He was the one that got set up in, was it the last Defiant issue, I think?
That was that one where it was just, we were like, where did that come from? I remember us being so confused by that issue. And I'm like, okay, I finally get what we were going for.
Yeah, it was completely to set this up, which kind of made sense. You know, at the time, it was like, this is probably setting something up. Because, like, I think Kalis had to go off and, like, find all the people again or whatever, which is what he's doing here, effectively.
Although, I don't know if this was a typo, but when he first introduces himself, he doesn't introduce himself as Kalis the Unforgettable. He introduces himself as Kalis the Forgettable.
I saw that because he was, I feel like he was calling himself a couple different things. And when he said forgettable, I was like, are you just like down on yourself?
or is he like, is they forgot because of the mind changes with the new universe and stuff? I don't know. But I'm betting it was a typo.
That's
maybe
funny.
But I laughed.
There was actually a typo, I think, when we get actually into Gateways. I have an error alert that I'll bring up later after the page turn. But as we go through these, it's interesting too that they still branded each of these as Defiant or Star Trek, because the story really did not differentiate between them as we went. Like, all the characters were all there. You know, it wasn't like, I mean, maybe in the Defiant ones, Worf was more of a central figure, but like Ben Sisko really was the main character throughout these, especially as he's trying to like recruit people, and Kalis is trying to help everybody remember who they are and where they came from.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I thought was really interesting was you've got Ben and Beverly Crusher, who are like best friends here. And throughout, like, Beverly is just like she wants to help Ben. Once Ben remembers like who he is, she doesn't want to have any part of like remembering anything, but she wants to help protect Ben as much as possible, until it gets to a point towards the end where she's like, I'm gonna go have my life. Like, I don't want to live the life that you're telling me about, where I've got like a husband who died and a son who effectively died, you know, became a traveler, and I end up alone or whatever. Like, I'm going to stay here and just keep living the life I'm familiar with. And she like takes off, and that's the end of her story, you know, which I was like, that's a bold move.
There's an interesting dilemma that the story brings up, which I do like, which is the concept of, there are people who exist in this new alternate universe created by Lore who would not exist in like the real prime universe. And if they reset, they'll probably die because they aren't supposed to be in the real universe. And that's an interesting moral dilemma. Do you save the correct universe and sacrifice those people who aren't supposed to be there, in quotes? Or do you keep the current universe that you have? I mean, it's one of those, you know, Star Trek type needs of the many, needs of the few type moral dilemma that they have. And I just really found that fascinating.
Yeah, that was a good one, because, you know, some of the people, like, because we've had Sela in the series, which we got to see her once in this, but it was more of a a nod to Tasha, you know, kind of Tasha's legacy, I guess, in the Prime universe. But, you know, they explain a couple times, like, if we reset this back to a real, quote unquote, real universe, some of you are dead. Some of you are alive in a much worse position. And there's other people who are dead in this universe who will actually live in the other one. And yeah, so that kind of just, yeah, further adds to that moral dilemma that they have. And it gets to a point, you know, and I think Beverly points it out, and, you know, some of the other people do too, is like, but this is my universe. I like this universe. Like, sure, we worship lore, but, you know, it's not so bad. And I'm just, you know, live and let live kind of thing.
There was an interesting thing that they did that had like a cool, they're going their direction, which is when they realize the four brains that Lore has taken, and it's the four engineers. You had Montgomery Scott for the Alpha Quadrant. You had O'Brien for the Gamma Quadrant. You had B'Elanna Torres for the Delta Quadrant, and then for the Beta Quadrant, Geordi. Yeah, Geordi LaForge. Yeah. And this was an example of me saying, you want like the biggest, most brilliant people to be your brains, and those are the four that you choose. I think this is out of all of history, out of all the people that could be living. I think this is an example of when you want to use the familiar faces for something instead of someone new, or you're saying that works for these comics because those people have been in these comics, as opposed to someone else that makes more sense. That was an example. I was like, that seems a little too convenient that the four people he chose are these four.
I think it's just because they're people that Lore had interacted with throughout this series.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be the, who do we want to see? I suppose.
That's a good point.
It was, too, an interesting dilemma, because here we are. Again, we know that these kind of continuing series that we've been reading are going to be ending soon. So it's a comic book. For all we know, they're going to destroy all the universes. And at the end of the final issue that we'll talk about, next time, is maybe they're just going to destroy everything and Star Trek doesn't exist anymore. You know, because we know they're going to be starting up other you know, we've got some mini series coming up, like the Red Shirts, and there's a Voyager Homecoming one, and there's another Strange New Worlds. And then we've got, like, starting, I think, in 2026 is when we've got kind of the new ongoing series, starting with a resurrected Kirk of some kind, or I'm wondering if he's a hologram like Janeway in Prodigy. And it takes place, like, in the far future, like, Discovery era probably, or something like that, you know. But I think that's going to be the more like ongoing series. So, like, you know, with these comics, they could kind of do whatever they want. And so, like, I mean, even as we were reading this, like, I didn't know if like they were all going to survive. Is this how Scotty's going to die? Is this how, you know, or in this particular universe or whatever? So it was interesting. And I mean, he could have picked like Zefram Cochrane and whoever.
Which Zefram, like, got like a really brief mention in one of the issues, and I was
he got like a page of which I don't remember what the deal was with that either.
It was just establishing that the person who had helped him out, instead of it being the next gen crew, it's Lore that does the first contact stuff. But making it the Borg Vulcans, I was like, that actually, I liked that idea. I was like, that's a really cool, because the Vulcans are already this detached, you know, the Katra, I was like, I see the vision. So I like that part of it.
I did too. Actually, at first I was like, when they introduced, I was like, I don't know if I'm going to like this, but then as Spock and Hugh kind of explained why, or as I guess it was just Spock that was explaining why they were like that, I was like, this totally makes sense. And I kind of almost wish that we could have seen this in some way, because it would have made sense. Like, same thing with Q and the Borg. I almost wish we saw them combined somehow. But
this is, compared to some of the other comics we've covered, I actually liked this one.
Yeah, and I think too that there's not a ton, like, that you would necessarily need to read before this. If you were just going to pick up these comics to read them, like, they did a pretty good job of setting the stage and kind of pointing you back, you know, to where maybe you, you know, talking about the Day of Blood, which was kind of the original mini arc or whatever in these runs. But yeah, like, I think that this series is one that you could just pick up if you want kind of a fun comic book romp, you know, and I think you would end up needing the next issue, which we're not talking about today, but like, just to conclude it. But, you know, I think in the back of one of these, it might have been the last one or might have been Lore War, the first one, that there was a piece at the end I just kind of skimmed through, just kind of a letter from the editors almost talking about, like, you know, this was the plan all along as they've been doing these series. When they first started introducing this line of comics, like these two lines really, was all to lead up to this. And so, like, they kind of say in their thing, like, the little hints that they sprinkled out through that pay off here. So, like, if you have been reading all along, like, there is stuff that gets paid off. But like I said, if you haven't read any of these, it's just kind of, you know, it's a comic series that like did pretty good job. I think it did what it set out to do.
This, despite being this being like a culmination event, I think it works better as an introduction point than my introduction point, which was midway through the run of both of them.
That's a good point. Yeah, because here you don't even need to know why they're like,
you just need to know, you know who Benjamin Sisko is, you know who Kalis is, you know who Lore is. Yeah. You'll figure it out.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one of the fun things that they do periodically through this whole run, that they did back in Day of Blood, they did Shax's Best Day, which was this kind of standalone that took place, you know, kind of between two pages, basically, of one of the comics, that you could go read his this story of him going and just basically waging a one-man war. Well, this time we get Shax's Worst Day. And I liked when he showed up in the, because I like when he's kind of drawn pretty realistically, right? You know, in the comics. But then for this standalone one, it's drawn and even with, like, the little footers on it, it's in the style of the Lower Decks comics. It's just, I don't know. No, you can't take it seriously. That it's a kick, and you actually see one of the scenes from the main comic arc replayed in the Lower Decks one. But in that style and a little bit more goofy. So it was just a fun, silly little side quest almost.
It's just the Lower Decks stuff doesn't work for me, and I get that they're supposed to be silly and fun, but I'm like, this is ridiculous. And then when I saw on some of the panels, it's just him cutting off heads and he's just saying, "Die, fascists," and I was just like, okay,
you're not gonna like it when we get back into the Lower Decks comics.
But I like main comic. I like the main comic more.
I mean, I think for both of us who are not huge into comics, I think we had a hit here. So if you don't think you're into reading comics and but think you might want to give it a shot, these might be good ones to pick up. And I'm sure at some point in the not too distant future, they'll have like a trade paperback with these all collected. It seems like they've been doing that for all of the little mini arcs. So. Yeah,
I will say. For our podcast today, there was something that I enjoyed reading this week.
Oh.
And it was the comics.
And we just talked about it.
Speaking of which,
you know, I guess we should, you know, go and see what lay beyond. Well, we have reached the end of the Gateways saga, and for better or for worse, I think when we get to the end of this, we'll talk about kind of the series as a whole and everything. But I think for the main discussion, I'm kind of thinking we should take it like story by story, just kind of hit on each one for a couple minutes and talk about them. So the first one, of course, is the original series, One Giant Leap by Susan Wright. And that is the conclusion to her TOS novel, One Small Step. So you got One Small Step and One Giant Leap.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was clever. And I have to say, this is the story that I think not only ties the best to the original book, but actually pays off the book in a substantial manner. I would actually say that this makes me look at the first book more fondly. Mm-hmm. And I wish we had, and we were talking off camera for this, I wish we had read this in conjunction with the novel, if we had done each short story at the same time, because this actually really made me appreciate the novel more.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this one literally picks up as Kirk is going through the gateway. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it's like you finish that book and turn the page and here's this story, you know, in media res, I think is what it's called.
Yeah, in media res.
He, mm-hmm. You know, and he's just, I mean, it doesn't miss a beat. And he, like, I was a little confused at first because it's been so long since I read that book. But it's him trying to, like, oh, shoot, I forgot her name now. But the gal that they were chasing in the first one, she had stolen, what is it?
Oh, TASM.
TASM, yeah. Like, she'd stolen a gateway component. And he was basically chasing her down, trying to get it back. And so it was kind of just this action story, you know, 50 pages or 40 pages or whatever it was. Yeah. And so by the end, like, yeah, the payoff for it, because, you know, one of our complaints of the first one was like, what does this really have? Like, there's a gateway in the story, but what does this have to do with the overall story?
Yeah.
And we finally get this connection at the end where Kirk learns who the Petra are, and they kind of do that classic villainous mustache twirling. You haven't seen The Last of Us.
Right.
And, you know, which kind of then sets everything up like this, you know. Like what I like kind of in my own review of it and kind of what you were just saying, like it, we either should have read it immediately after, or I even think that this would have just made a good few extra chapters of that book.
Yeah.
Cause the book wasn't that long, and that story didn't necessarily need a to be continued to be, you know, like since there was no other real connection to the other stories, per se.
And this kind of has to go to a discussion of the structure of the book, of the series in general, for a second, on a macro level. Each of these, with the exception of the last one, of the next gen one, are all purely just about, like, the single character, the captain of each ship, and only has to do with that series. They're so disconnected that making an event collection at the end doesn't naturally make you feel the payoff that it would have if they had said each captain's going in and then the last book is all of the captains having to work together and having to interact with each other. Mm-hmm. Maybe it wouldn't have made sense canon-wise, but at least it would have been like, oh, this is making that payoff. Or something, and each short story is a perspective of the captain working with the other captains. Yeah. Had they done that, I think that I would have felt like, oh, this is, you know, this is a true payoff. It's worth the event nature. I mean, they jumped up from paperback to hardcover for this book. I know you have, I think you have a paperback edition because it still did it. My point is that they made an event out of this. Mm-hmm. And to be event worthy, you have to, you know, the payoff has to be there. And this book, The first short story does pay off the first novel, but it feels, as you said, it should have been tacked on to the first novel, not worth being part of this collection.
Yeah. I think, too, that I think with our kind of 24th century crew, having them all work together, like Kira and even Janeway and, you know, Calhoun. All of them working together. And with this TOS story, I feel like it could have been an easy, because I guess what I was hoping for reading this TOS story was that there was going to be something that we were going to pick up from it, even just one of the other books that we read that would then connect into this one. Some character, like one of the Petra or something, like maybe Smith.
Smith, exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Or the giant, you know, which, you know, something, you know, because it would have been harder to have Kirk or even Nick Keller from the Challenger one to interact with the 24th century crew, but like having something in this story that's like, oh my gosh, this is something that the rest of our crews aren't going to learn until the New Frontier book, but we're getting it now. Like Kirk is getting it now, but you know, for whatever reason, that information gets lost after 100 years. Like the fact that it didn't have really anything else to, I mean, it was a story with a gateway in it is what it turned out to be. And like this short story itself was good and a good conclusion to the last or to the first book. But mm-hmm. yeah, as a part of like, you know, just picking up this concluding book in the series was kind of like, oh, this is a short story.
Yep.
You know, so it was a little disappointing in that way. It was well written. I thought that it had a good pace in it, like the kind of chase that Kirk was on and everything. But yeah, after I finished this one, I was like, oh boy, I've got, you know, 300 more pages to get through.
Yep. Yep. Then we have the next short story. And I just saw your notes and I'm so glad you feel this way.
Yes.
Because I honestly, everyone knows I don't love being negative, but I was too nice when we talked about chainmail. I was too nice about it. In retrospective, it just went down in my estimation. I don't remember much from it. I started reading this short story, and the first line of your note is the exact thing I thought, which is, I have no idea what's going on.
Yeah. I was probably a couple pages into it when I wrote that down, because I was like utterly confused. Like I was sitting there thinking, I don't remember one thing about it. About chainmail.
Me neither.
And when I think about the name of it, chainmail, I remembered, oh wait, there was some ship that they went on and there was a super light chainmail material mm-hmm. that they could wear, but I don't remember why. I don't know. Like, and as we get through this story, we find out that Nick Keller, the captain or commander or whatever of the Challenger, he's been on this planet for a while. Like, it sounds like he's been there days, weeks, mm-hmm. maybe, and he's doing whatever it is, you know, he's doing. And it's something where he had gone through, because like there was, this is me just off the cuff trying to remember what chainmail was about, but like there was basically the ship that they got, like that they went on to, there was on the other side of the gateway or whatever, there was this race. Or maybe it was a couple, or there mm-hmm. there was one that like needed to come back to come our side because they thought Belterre is their promised land or their original home or something like that. And they're like, I mean, yeah, we can share the planet, but we're there now too, and we can come help bring your people across. But then there's like the Blood and Cauld or whatever, they're like mm-hmm. those two races on our side, and that aren't going to be friendly to them, but they're already being persecuted somehow on their side of the gateway. Like, I don't know. It's just this convoluted thing that even when we're here, it's, you know, Nick is kind of they're trying to like store up enough energy to keep the gateway open and get all of their ships through. And then some people decide they don't want to, but then they do want to, and they do it. And I just thought, what is the point?
I agree. This? Yeah.
You know, like I just, even it, this was almost, you know, in the original series when I was like, yeah, it's a Star Trek story that has a gateway in it. This one wasn't even much of a Star Trek story, I hate to say.
I agree. It wasn't much of a story.
There wasn't much of a gateway. And so you say we were nice on the first one, or too nice on the first one. I mean, we were still pretty harsh on it. And I think with this one, it's like, man, you know, Diane Carey is like, she's obviously a good writer. But I don't really know what story she was trying to tell here, or, you know, did she not get the memo about where this was being included? I don't know. It was just, by the time I got to the end of it, I was just like, in a head fog, and was just like, I don't know. And by that point I was like, I don't know if I want to keep reading this book.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna DNF of it, obviously. But like, I mean, I messaged you at some point going, I'm having a really hard time picking this book up.
Yep. And you know, the first story, I was like, okay, this is okay. It's okay. I don't love it, but it's okay. And then I had that story and I was like, this is just awful. But the third story in here made me angry.
Okay.
The third story. I love Keith. I love Keith. I love you, Keith, if you're listening. I love Keith the Canada. But he made me so angry with the third story, which is Horn and Ivory, the DS9 mm-hmm. story. Because it starts and they're back. Kira is back in like the Bajor time before all of the Federation, the Cardassians. It's just the people
of
Bajor.
It's not even Bajor yet.
Yeah, it's not even Bajor yet. And I knew instantly she's either in the past or she's in a alternate reality flashback. She's just going to escape somehow. And I had this feeling that this whole story is worthless, that we're not actually telling anything. Maybe we're getting a little bit of character development for Kira. Maybe. But even after reading it, I don't feel like she got a crazy amount either. And it really just felt like, hey, Keith wanted to kind of tell a fantasy-like story. Kind of like we got, I don't know if you ever read the Kalis novel by Michael Jan Friedman.
No.
But that book alternates between the modern-day Kalis, the clone, and the actual Kalis, the Unforgettable. And the scenes with Kalis, the Unforgettable, feels like an epic fantasy novel. And it's like the armies fighting and him, you know, going and drinking mead and hanging out. And like, it feels like a fantasy novel, but it works in that novel. Here, it feels like he wanted to do that story, couldn't do a full novel of it. So he kind of threw it into the Gateway stuff and used the Gateway as the excuse to throw Kira back. And I was so frustrated. I was so frustrated by that.
You know, it's funny. As I was reading each of these stories, I kind of rated them as I was going just to see like kind of what my overall rating would be, which I then decreased even further. But yeah, as you talk about that, like, and as I kind of read back through my notes, you know, like, yeah, it was pretty obvious right away. Like what you said, she was either in the past or an alternate reality, but it felt like it was probably the past.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like, in the Challenger book, it seems like she's actually been there for quite a while already.
Yeah.
By the time we pick up the story, like she's like kind of fighting in, it's not even a resistance. It's more like a civil war between, mm-hmm. you know, factions on the planet. But I was getting confused. Like, is she undercover? But then it's like, no, she's using her own name.
Mm-hmm.
Did she forget who she was or how she got there? Like, why was she there? And, you know, even she's asking at different points, did the prophets send her? And then she gets to this point where, you know, she's like, I think they're getting ready for a big fight or something. And, you know, she's gotten real close to one of the kind of leaders. And she just decides, I better go back and find that Gateway and go home.
Mm-hmm.
And so she does. Like, and that's it. Doesn't say goodbye or anything. She just peace out. And then I had to say, like, What was the point?
Yep.
She's got some good philosophical questions that she's asking herself. Like, did the prophets send me? What are the prophets trying to teach me? And we literally don't get an answer to that, even in the future story, like further stories. And this is one where, again, because yeah, Keith is a good writer. He's got really great stories. And I've been reading through some of the Starfleet Corps of Engineer ones, and he's got some, you know, good ones mm-hmm. in there too. In fact, I'll talk about the Gateways one here, but, like this is, there was a Gateways connection at the end, in that, like, there was like a connection with the prophets, but as a conclusion to Demons of Air and Darkness, it wasn't,
no.
it had nothing to do with that book.
I agree.
And I think this is a kind of a product of this era of Deep Space Nine is the continuing story, like the relaunch mm-hmm. after the show. And so I think both in Demons of Air and Darkness, you know, there was some story things like with Char, like the Andorian,
yeah.
and some of the relational issues and, you know, the procreation issues or whatever it was that they're having on the planet. His mom was trying to get him to go back home.
Yep.
And none of that's done here, and which is fine because it didn't need to be here. But like, it didn't need to be in that book either. But that's because it. But I'm saying because like, it, like as far no, as the right. gateways
they've done
go,
it before.
Well, yeah, that's true. But like, but also just as part of the Gateways story, it's not doing anything for that. What it's doing is helping further the overall Deep Space Nine story. And right. I think that's if we were then to take after this story, go in to read whatever the next book is in the Deep Space Nine series, it might pick up on some of these things. But we don't get that if we're just reading the Gateways.
I would be pretty much willing to bet that if you read the book that came out before the Gateways for the DS9 relaunch, and then went and immediately read the book after the Gateways DS9 book, you would not be missing anything. You could you could skip the novel and the short story, and I would bet it's not really connecting. And the stuff with you were talking about with Char, we talked about in our review of that episode, that's done in other books, DS9 post-relaunch books, then I think they're handled better in the other books too. So it's not like that was a necessary, you know, if that was only happened in that book, I'd be like, interesting. But no, we've seen that before.
Yeah. So I was just like, yeah, I was just disappointed with this one too, because I really, really liked Demons of Aaron Darkness. It was, I mean, you know, we haven't gotten to the Next Generation story here yet, but like we'd already read the Next Generation book. That was the third book, which really set up all of the stuff for this era, like this 24th century era. And the Deep Space Nine book, I thought, just had really good stuff with, you know, Char and Nog trying to figure out how to shut down the Gateways and the whole thing with the Europa Nova and the radiation on that planet, which we don't really get anything here either. Mm-hmm. You know, any conclusion to that. I think we get a little bit in the Next Generation story, but like that the book Demons of Air and Darkness at least forwarded the Gateway story somewhat.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then this one, it just like you know, this stuff with Kira would be interesting, and yeah, it could probably fit in another novel somewhere. We already know she's, I think it's called like attainted or whatever. Like she's not wearing her earring. Mm-hmm. She's not allowed to pray or whatever all that is. But like, yeah, it's kind of one of those, like, was this really the place to tell that story? Was there a reason? Like, were we trying to like put this in here so that maybe people would go back and read the rest of the Deep Space Nine books? Like, is this just a marketing ploy?
Yeah.
Which, yes, but.
Well, the next story is my personal favorite in the series, and we were talking off mic about this as well. I have realized all you have to do is just get the character voices right for Voyager, and I am a happy camper because I just love following the Voyager characters, and that's what happened here. And this was a story where this kind of – I could see them doing this episode of TV. Like this, it really felt like this would have fit right in with season 7. Voyager. Janeway is transported to this place and she gets kind of confused, and then it's Q is the cause and all the problems. And
lowercase Q though, right?
No, this one's uppercase Q.
Oh, there's uppercase Q. That's right. Oh no, the dog was the dog, lowercase Q. So
yeah, the dog belonged to lowercase Q, but uppercase Q was the one causing anyway. Right. And I at least felt that this one, again, similarly to the first story, at least kind of paid stuff off, because it paid off the stuff with the dog. It also paid off stuff at the end with all of the ships. Voyager talking with all the different, you know, crews that they had been working with to get through the nebula. And it felt like it was paying off Janeway's storyline with this, and also paying off stuff from the TV show, which was her relationship with Q, which is just hilarious to read. Hilarious. And there was a really cool callback to the episode where she meets Riker. Where they pull Riker into Voyager and then pull it back, and he doesn't remember anything, but Janeway does. I loved that. And for a half moment, I thought, oh, she's going to Enterprise. Maybe finally we're getting a connection. Like the two stories are connecting or something. Maybe we'll read the Enterprise book and she'll be in that one.
Yeah.
And no, that's not where they were going. No. And as soon as Picard showed up, I was like, okay, this they're not connecting. Because if Picard's there.
Well, and like just the way that he talked to her, like there was something off about Picard from the beginning.
He was like, "Yeah, everything's good. Don't worry. We're just, go get a shower." And it's like,
"Yeah, like what?" You know, as we're reading the story, this one I definitely said was the best and most relevant to the Gateways so far. Yeah, I did like that it concluded her, it concluded the Voyager story. You know, getting everybody back to their own places and everything, and I was a little bit frustrated with the Q connection just with, and I think I misread some of it. Like, I was inferring that Q was like the creator of the Gateways in general, that he gave them to the Iconians. No. But it was more just that he was the one causing all of the openings right there in Delta Quadrant. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You and I have been talking about it. Like, I was under this thing of like, again, the Q stuff is never brought up in any of the other stories. And, you know, as we'll talk about in the next gen one, Picard actually meets the Iconians. So it's like, reading it, thinking that the Q is like, no, I gave them this technology. This is mine. Like, you know, no, that's, they didn't do anything special for it. Like, well, that's not accurate. Like, it was just him being him. And, you know, yeah, the dog got loose and ended up, I did like that was like, little Q's dog and everything, but I thought this was just, it was a fun one, you know, watching her go around, end up on the Enterprise talking to Riker and mm-hmm. and having that encounter, but also seeing Janeway's kind of skeptical mind, you know, as she realizes this isn't right and, you know, everything. So,
and there's a reason that Golden did all those books, is because her and Byer just get the characters and they get voice, and when your voice works, the story doesn't have to be stellar.
Yeah,
and the story wasn't stellar, but the voice worked.
Yeah, well, and I mean, I think, you know, when we talked about the Voyager book, No Man's Land. Mm-hmm. I remember really, really, well, super short, so it was a really fast read, but like it was just a really, really good Voyager story. Like, the Gateway stuff was less relevant there, I guess.
No,
like
it was very relevant, I felt.
Well, it was very relevant as far as the situation they were in, but it wasn't like they were trying to solve the mystery.
No,
the
they were not.
They were just trying to get through the nebula and everything. Mm-hmm. But I remember it was just a really good Voyager story. And like you said, the voices were good and everything. And this one was kind of a similar thing. Like, as far as the overall Gateways, you know, that wasn't really there except for their portion of it. And they're in the Delta Quadrant, so what are you going to do? You know, mm-hmm. And they did have a crew there from... No, it was one of the other... It was in the Next Generation book where there was a ship from the Delta Quadrant. That's what it was. But this was... Especially as we've been getting through the stories, this was definitely the best one so far as we've gotten through.
And the next one, the Peter David one, I felt...
Okay. Hold on. You got to tell everybody about your connection with the title of this story. You blew my mind before we recorded.
So I had read the titles of all the stories and just was like, okay, that's the title. And so I'm just reading the story. And then we get to the moment that Q shows up. Mm-hmm. And I looked back at the title and I was like, in the Q, Q-U-E-U-E. And I was like, oh, that's what that means. Yeah. And we were talking about it. And
you're completely blown away.
You're blown away. We didn't even register.
No. So very clever, Christy Golden.
Yes, very clever. That is more clever than you are cordially invited.
Oh,
I remember that. I was like, okay.
Q are cordially uninvited.
Uninvited, so, right. Yeah. And I was like, okay, you're just, that's also on the nose.
Not a spectacular story either.
That was very on the nose, that one. This one was clever. But the next story by Peter David, I had two conflicting thoughts on it. One is I felt very similar to the DS9 one, where I was kind of like, nothing that happens in this one's going to matter because they're in this weird alternate history past type thing. And the thing that did make it matter is I felt there was some good character stuff with Calhoun and Shelby, because both of them were in there. That was a new dynamic. Every other time it's just been the one captain. This time it was two that are in the Gateway. And so you had a dynamic of the two people from outside the Gateways. And so I did like what they did with Shelby and Calhoun in terms of their relationship, them being newlyweds, but them keep constantly being kind of on the rocks because they're in separate ships and stuff like that. So their character stuff worked, but the story, his stuff with his father, and the story of the Smiths dying, and
which wasn't much of a story. No, it was sorry, dead on arrival,
and just not much happening in this one. Just made me go, okay. I didn't. Yeah. I felt like it was kind of like pointless, like the other ones. So,
yeah. It, this was I really liked the story. And between, Cold Wars and this story, Death After Life, really does make me want to go back and read all the New Frontier books. Cause, the characters were so good here. And that's something we talked about last time about Peter David's, especially about New Frontiers, that he's created all these characters and it's been one big long arc for them. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we're like, at this point, there's like 13 or 14 New Frontier books, including the Gateways one.
Yeah.
But to have this much meat to, you know, for Calhoun, especially with his father and this kind of planet, this Valhalla kind of type of place that they're in.
Yeah.
Was so good. And even Shelby, you know, got some growth there too. I mean, it was really, for his character still, but like, you know, she had to kind of get after him, I guess, a little bit at the end, saying like, well, you know, you either can choose to stay here in your version of hell, or you can come back with me. And if we both end up dead and you end up back here anyway, whatever, but I want to spend as much time with you as I can. Like, it was just like really, I think a good, kind of a groundbreaking moment for the two characters. And, you know, with the Gateway stuff, like that, again, it, just like in the DS9 one, it just was not present here. It was just, it had very little, if anything, to do with the story. Again, it's how they got there and it's how they got back home. Why they stuck around, like, you know, by the time we're at this story in the book, we've got one story left after this one. I'm just like, why did everybody go through the Gateways if they just go through some trial just to go home anyway with no furthering of this Gateways mystery or the Iconians or anything? You know, we've got the two Smiths here who, even in their, one of them, like, as they were dying, like, wrote, like, in the ground, like, the giant lied or the giant something, you know, and we don't even know, learn who the giants are until the Next Generation story when Picard actually meets them.
Yeah.
And again, like, it's not connected. It's like, you know, we get this, like, oh, these guys are like 7'9" or I don't know, whatever, how tall, like he said that they were, but like, okay, these are the giants. So the Smiths actually were working with the Iconians supposedly, or, you know, something, but like, we don't get that here. In fact, the two characters that, you know, who played a fairly prominent role in the New Frontier or in the Cold Wars novel.
Yeah.
Are not in this one, except that when Calhoun walks by them and sees them both dead, you know, like, it kind of, I don't know, like, it's I'm so torn on it because it's a really good story, but in the context of the Gateways and the reason we're reading this book, it doesn't do anything,
you know? And this begs another discussion, which is there is a phenomena among publishing, specifically among short story publishing, where publishers will have a pitch, an idea. Some publishers I know, they literally have artwork for a book. They'll say, all right, here's the artwork, here's the pitch, here's the idea. Go write a short story of some kind around this concept, and then we'll take like the top 10, put them in the collection, and the stories have nothing to do with each other. All it is like, for in this instance, hey, write a story with a Gateway, and then they'll publish it like that. And there are people who really enjoy that type of storytelling, and that's just not naturally for me. There was one I read that I really liked. It was World's Long Lost from Bain Books. That one, I actually had some really great stories in there, so I enjoyed it. But generally, when I read those things, if they're disconnected, and it's like you just have this one idea, oh, it's fantasy guys with special axes, or it's like you just have this one idea and everyone's writing their own crazy unique story. It just doesn't work for me. And that's what this was. That's really boils down to. The only thing that felt like it had a story was Greenberger, who's the like the showrunner here, the co-showrunner with Ordover. And I firmly, going into the next story, I firmly believe that had Greenberger just written a trilogy, let's say, of Gateways novels and just made it Star Trek Gateways, it's Robert Greenberger writing the whole trilogy, maybe make it a Next Gen thing, maybe make it a crossover, but just like Greenberger write the trilogy, I think it would have worked. I think it would have been entertaining. But because they didn't do that, by the time I got to the Greenberger story, I'll be honest, I just checked out.
Yeah.
I read it. I don't remember much from it. And I was just, I'll be honest, I was ready to be done.
Yeah.
And I as I was reading it, I was like, okay, I'm seeing stuff connect and I'm seeing that he's actually like working hard to try to.
He's the try only to, one that's working it.
Yeah. To tie everything up, to try to give an overarching story. And in my opinion, he wrote the best novel of the series. Mm-hmm. Cold Wars was like a close second for me, the New Frontier one. But I think he wrote the best novel, not just the best Gateways novel, just the most enjoyable book in this series. But because he was at the end and because it was, it was just like, okay, I'm checked out. I'm not.
Yeah.
You may be doing a good job with it, but I'm not like you lost me after so many duds earlier.
Yeah. Well, and this was like the longest one too, like the longest of the short stories. I mean, this was in true novella territory at this point.
It was approaching novel length because if you look at word count.
Oh yeah.
It was like, I want to say about 2/3 the length of Greenberger's, Next Gen book.
And, I mean, it was over 100 pages. I know that. It was like 120, 150 pages.
And if I would be willing to bet it was very close to Christy Golden's novel length. Because hers is so short. So that's why I'm saying, just give him a trilogy. I think he could have done it.
And it worked having it that be the longest too, because he had the job of tying everything up, like closing everything out. The thing that was hard was, he is kind of concluding this Petra Iconian story to some extent. He does. Yeah. But it was a bit rocky.
Yeah.
Like that part of the story. And I felt like he really wanted to write a Picard standalone story, which is what everybody else was doing with their captains. Yep. But he had the job of doing everything else too. So we had a lot, back on the Enterprise with Riker and everything. And I actually liked a lot of that, like seeing those scenes with Riker in command and kind of trying to hold everybody together, hold this gateway open. The Petra have been kind of captured and they're kind of keeping them at bay until they get everything else figured out. But the Picard story, I liked it in some ways, but like it drug on too long, like all his little encounters with everybody being called a young god. And of course he's got all the answers that everybody's looking for, which just further solidifies in their minds that he is a god. But as far as like him meeting the Iconians made a lot of sense, and I'm glad we got to see that. And then even the kind of the result of his journey, I guess, to the city and finding that resonator or whatever and how that all comes to be was good, except for all the cameos that we ended up getting because of it. Like, of course, all of, and even Burgoyne, who shows up in the story, like Riker calls the Excalibur, and I kind of had to roll my eyes. It's cute and everything, but Burgoyne's like, don't you think it's a little ironic that you and I are talking? And Riker's like, why, what are you talking about? And like, obviously it's a joke that like of all of the first officers and all of Star Trekdom, two of the first officers from the series that we happen to be reading are actually talking to each other when they have no business otherwise, and it was just like, you know, it was it was cute, but it was also kind of like, all right, let's get on with it.
Too much, too breaking the fourth wall.
Exactly. And then even some of the ships that were charged with taking those pieces of the resonator or whatever, you know, to the different places were all familiar ships. It wasn't anything that we'd never seen before. In fact, one of them, and here's where the error is that the potential typo is that Captain Solok from the Tacumbra, which that's the captain and the ship from the Deep Space Nine Take Me Out to the Holosuite episode, that you know, when they played baseball against the Vulcans, he said that, and I think it's actually Captain Solok talking. I don't even think it's just in the narrative. He mentions that their gateway or their resonator or whatever it is that they're going to do is on Titan, Jupiter's largest moon. And I, like, as soon as I read that, I was like, no, Titan is Saturn's largest moon.
Right, yeah.
It's not, you know, and it was just like, of all of the things that, like, between, you know, Greenberger,
that's not a spelling
and,
error. That is a,
that's
not a,
that's, yeah, like, that's just, and that seems like kind of an easy win too. Like that somebody along the way, like of all the people reading it, and I know that something, you know, gets missed from time to time. And I was like, that's a kind of a big one, but, but yeah, by the end of it, I was just like, I was happy that everything kind of turned out the way it did. You know, like, obviously they got to get the gateways shut down and everything. And you know, but, yeah, this, I would not say that this was necessarily the best story in this collection either. And it's just, you know, to be kind of the one that everything is kind of hanging on, it's just kind of like, okay, well, I guess we're done with the book.
I think that whenever I talk about older Star Trek books or just older Star Trek episodes or whatever, people comment, well, you need to look at the perspective of at the time it was released, because, you know, we have the benefit of following crossover series and events like The Fall and Destiny and Prey, where they have these long planned out trilogies or these five book series where the authors are sharing characters and working together and all this stuff. And I think that, you know, from this perspective, it would be disappointing. And so you look back at the perspective of the people at the time, where in 2001, there's been crossover events. They've had, I think, what, the Captain's Table was a collection of...
Which gets called out here, too.
Stories. Yeah. There's been crossovers, but not quite the same way, and they don't have the overarching narrative as much. They're starting to get it with DS9, but, I mean, Voyager and Next Gen have not happened yet. And because of that, you have to be like, well, maybe cut them a little bit of slack. Well, that only works if your stories are really entertaining. I can cut the slack of you not paying off the gateway stuff, you not really having crossover, you making an event and then not actually following through. I can at least forgive all of that if the story is entertaining. But when the story is not entertaining, and it has that other baggage, it just, I can't get grade it favorably, which is really sad. And it sours, unfortunately, the entire series because of it, when you end on such a dour note. And I'm not saying that the final story was the worst. I'm just saying that the final book, What Lay Beyond, just did not pay off the way it's supposed to and did not leave the best taste in the mouth.
Yeah.
And that's tough to say, because we talked earlier, we spent 9 months on this.
Yeah.
This was a commitment of a series. And I'm thinking I'm going to be more gun shy on picking a series next time. If I pick a series, I'm picking like a duology or a trilogy. Yeah, right? They better be really short books.
I definitely want to read the Invasion one. So that's only 4 books. So.
Okay. And I think those were like the short.
Yeah. Those are not too long,
but yeah, it's really painful, because again, this series had 2 books that I thought were fantastic. It had the Next Gen book and the New Frontier book. I loved both of those. It had 2 books that were entertaining, which I would say were the DS9 book and the Voyager book. Neither one's all-timers, but they were entertaining. And then it had two not-so-entertaining books, which are the first two, the TOS and the Chainmail, the Challenger one. And at least TOS is elevated a tiny bit with this book, but that's not a huge deal. So the series was all over the place, and it had some great, had some good, had some not so good, not bad. But when I look back on the Gateway Saga as a whole, it's really sad to say it's just not going to have that fondness for me.
Yeah. And yeah, for me, unfortunately, the idea of the series worked better than the execution of it.
Yeah.
You know, because I've mentioned this multiple times, but I read this book years and years ago. Mm-hmm. And so when you brought up, like, hey, we should do this, I was like, heck yeah. Like, I don't remember anything about it, but, you know, big
that's
big
we don't want now.
Sure. Yeah. but, you know, I think that the authors were, and this is just my assumptions here. Like, I don't know what was happening, you know, like, I don't think that they were working as closely then as it's the authors have in recent years. But, like, I think that the authors were given a little too much freedom and not enough of a solid through line for where the series should go and the different points that they should hit along the way in each of their stories. There was no cohesion between these books. And that, when we're talking about especially something with an actual like name for the series, like Gateways. I mean, you know, you mentioned The Fall and Prey and things like that. Like, those are cohesive stories, still part of a bigger epic story, kind of longer story, but like those are within themselves cohesive stories. And I would say actually Typhon Pact was one that I didn't find as cohesive, but it was still all of them. It was, Not all of them were about the Typhon Pact, but like they had Typhon Pact elements or specific, you know, races or whatever. But it wasn't like a start to finish kind of thing. It was,
and they were building the stuff in that series.
And they were building it, yeah.
And I think The Fall is the best comparison, because The Fall is five different books. You're mm-hmm. following essentially, well, four different crews. With it, one crew is between two books, but five books, four crews, and it's five authors, but yet really cohesive and really feels like they had a plan and they worked together and stuff.
Yeah, they had a start point and an end point and some kind of points that they hit a lot.
And each book is its own, like each book in The Fall is its own original story. It's telling something, it's trying to tell itself as part of the greater whole. So it's not like each author was just, we're just hemmed in because the editor is guiding the story and we're just the facilitator. No, they were telling their own original creative stories.
Yeah.
But it worked. And as you said, it's because they're given too much leeway.
Yeah.
They weren't reined in enough.
Yeah, like you mentioned earlier, it's like they have a story and there's a gateway in it. But that, to me, isn't enough to justify a series like this, kind of an event series. And I mean, there were threads in this that weren't even picked back up, and we talked about some of them, but one of them was like that Nog and Shar, you know, shut down the gateways, and they mentioned it like in the very last story, I think, like, well, it was only for like 10 minutes, and it was like, yeah, but that was a pivotal 10 minutes. It's like, but then they just kind of gave up.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't see anything with that. Like, that was really the only point in this whole series where anybody was trying to do anything about the gateways. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it was just them trying to clean up the mess or, you know, deal with, you know, political issues and assassinations and whatever. But there was just stuff that was like completely dropped. Even if it was very cohesive, and even if all of these stories in What Lay Beyond worked in the cohesiveness of all of the other, the six books that came before, having it be a hardcover, like short story, conclusion where you can read a book and it says to be continued at the end. And if you want to read that soon, you know, within the next year, you have to buy a hardcover version of it. It's just a money grab from the publisher. Like it, which to me is just kind of a little bit gross, you know, and I will say too, I don't think it's a coincidence that Star Trek has not done anything quite like this again, where they've like done To Be Continued and like 3 months later you've got like a hardcover to buy
or yeah something. That's true.
It's just, and again, I think what I wanted from this series, from this saga, was mm-hmm. kind of an epic thing with the, almost like we got with Coda.
Yeah.
You know, with like the Davidians or something like that, I think that was. Yeah. Like that, this is like kind of one-off race or whatever, but they did this epic story. I really think they could have done something like that here. Mm-hmm. And to me, I just wonder, like, I wonder if, you know, gallery books at this point wouldn't touch the gateways with a 10-foot pole because of
the baggage. I just think,
and it's just so unfortunate because I think there's so many good stories there, and even these were good stories if they just brought in more of that cohesiveness. And
there is one thing the book has. I don't know if your paperback has it, but I know my hardcover has it. Yeah. And it's pretty cool. They have a 50-page timeline at the end, which goes through the episodes, TV episodes, the movies, and all the books up till this point, and like places them in the timeline.
Yeah.
That's a really cool feature. Not worth the price of a whole book for it. But it took a sting out of me being like, all right, I'll keep the book because at least it has that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah, for sure. I remember, when that came out, because it was on like one of the bulletin boards or whatever they used to call that on online, discussion boards or whatever, and seeing it from, from time to time, and then it got published in a book. It was like, oh, that's so cool, because they would even take like the short stories like from the Strange New Worlds,
the collections.
Contests and. Mm-hmm. And then, like, if there was a part of the book that took place, like, in the far past, like in Spock's world or Q-squared, when they have stuff that's, like, in the far past or the far future, would take those, like, chapters out and place them in the right spots. So if you were going to be a true Trekkie and read and watch everything in
absolute... You gotta read this chapter from this book.
Exactly.
Oh, that's... I love Star Trek. Not that much.
Not that much. Yeah, that would take a long time. Well, before we kind of finish up here, I have been reading the Starfleet Corps of Engineers books, and I did this way back when, too, just for this very purpose, and I think I will continue reading them now, but book 10 in that series, and when it came out, it started in 2001, or I think early 2001, they started coming out with these SCE, Starfleet Corps of Engineers books, and they were ebook only. It was kind of that an experiment that Pocket Books was doing for just ebooks. And the 10th book of that was called Here There Be Monsters. And it's another Keith R.A. DeCandido story. And I will actually say, especially after getting through What Lay Beyond, and it's almost like reading Shax's Worst Day to some extent, because this was kind of advertised or whatever you want to call it as the epilogue to the Gateway Saga. And the Da Vinci is the ship from those books. And it's almost like a cleanup crew, kind of a, almost like a Lower Deck situation, but they're kind of the engineering cleanup crew. And it's basically like this planet is being overrun by these monsters, is what they call them, from another universe that came to this planet through the gateways. And so this crew is tasked with, corralling them and trying to figure out what to do with them because the gateways are now closed for good. We can't send them back. And it was just, it's actually a really fun story. It's just, it's goofy. It's kind of silly like these Corps of Engineer books are. It's gateways adjacent. And, having to step out of the, like, okay, the stories aren't going to tie into the gateways, but like, there's a lot of good character moments in it. They actually have a linguist in the book who gets some development in there and learns how to communicate with these monsters and everything. But, it's probably not necessary to read all the previous, like all the 9 previous SCE stories first, but it probably would help. Mm-hmm. But just kind of a fun little conclusion there. And I actually think it probably worked better than some of the other stories that we got too. But just wanted to get my thoughts on that, because I don't think we've ever talked about the Starfleet Corps of Engineers on Literary Treks in 390-odd episodes.
So, really? I think you know why it probably is.
They're all ebooks.
They're all ebooks. I think they did do a few physical copies of some of them, but it's because they're all ebooks.
I think they did eventually put them all into mass market. Like they collected, several at a time into mass market paperback. I think that they got through, because there's like 60 Starfleet Corps of, like, SCE books, and then they changed the name to Corps of Engineers, and they did same thing with those. I think they started releasing those in mass market as well. Mm-hmm. But they're fun, like just little short story novella kind of things, about 60 to 80 pages usually. So, and usually they're pretty cheap wherever you get your ebooks. So if you're looking for quick reads, there you go. If you're trying to up your book count. As far as the Gateways series as a whole and what lay beyond in particular, I'll say that, you know, and I mentioned it before, but What Lay Beyond for me was just, it was a tough book to want to pick up. It took me a couple, like it took me longer than it should have to read it. I think the last story, the Next Generation one, was the only one I did not read in one sitting, just because that was a little bit longer. I think all the other ones I read each of them in a sitting, and then would have to put the book down and go, okay, I need to go to something else. But, you know, like we said, I don't want to belabor it too much, but it was just, I'll just conclude by saying it was disjointed. It was pretty clumsy in handling the conclusion of what could have been an epic saga. And overall, I'm giving the book 2 out of 5 stars. I would call it 3, 3.5 probably, if I'd gone on a scale of 10. If I'm being generous, but you know, and as a whole, it was hit or miss. I think you actually said it well. Like, there's a couple really good stories, a couple pretty decent ones, and a couple not so great ones. It's frustrating that you have to read all of the books to really get anything out of What Lay Beyond. But if you're a completionist, whatever the word is, mm-hmm. I think there's some good things in here. But if you're not a completist, then I'd have a hard time recommending this series unless you wanted just to pick up the standalone ones.
Yeah. I feel very similar to you. I will say, I saw your notes. My eyes skipped over some of the words in there. So the first thing I saw was, it's a 3.5, maybe a 4 if I'm being generous. And I was about to say, there is no way you are giving this a 4 out of 5. And then like, oh, out of 10. Okay. Yeah. Here's what I'll say. The Voyager story in here, because of the character of Janeway and the voices and the way that Christy Golden writes, was enough to get me to be like, I'm glad I read that story. So it wasn't a total waste. But out of 5, I'm going to give it a 1.5 out of 5. On Goodreads, I gave it a 2, because whenever I do like a 0.5 on Goodreads, I bump it up.
You are nice.
Yeah, I know there's people who don't, but I'm like, look, in rounding, you round up on the 1.5. Yeah. So I'm giving it a 1.5. The 0.5 is for the Voyager story. Maybe the TOS story, the TNG. Yeah. And I'm so sad to have to be so negative on this. But, you know, we have to be honest in our reviews. And yeah.
Yeah, and we, like Matthew and I have talked about, like you and I have talked about, like not all of them are going to be home runs. There's going to be some stinkers in there, unfortunately. And yeah. I will say, like after kind of beating this to death, like, the authors themselves, like I really enjoy the authors. Like it's clear that they know how to write a book, you know. Mm-hmm. And I don't want anybody to think, like, now I don't know how many, like, some of these authors, I might not read a whole lot of their stuff, you know, but I think that, you know, I don't want anybody to hear us kind of ragging on the book thinking we're ragging on the authors, because, like, I don't want anybody to think that.
Perfect example. Keith DeCandido has written some of my favorite Star Trek stories. His Klingon stories that he's written for the IKS Gorkin, some of my favorites. Mm-hmm. His Articles of the Federation is one of, if not my favorite, standalone novels. So he can do well. I've read good stuff from Christy Golden. I've read good stuff from Peter David. I haven't read Carrie or Wright yet, so I can't really give anything on them. So we know they can do well. It's just... it was just a poor concept here.
Yeah.
But you know what is not going to be disappointing? Our last and next podcasts. In case you missed it, we did talk recently with both David and Kirsten about their new drama podcast, the Con podcast. So just in case you missed that, go check that out. That was a lot of fun. And our next discussion is another David Mack thing, which is for Ring of Fire, which is the new Strange New Worlds hardcover. And yes. I think that's going to be a lot of fun to talk about that one.
Yes, talk about good authors and who understand assignments. So, No, I'm looking forward to that. Anytime we can, I think we were talking before we started recording about all of the new books that we've got coming out here soon. We've got Ring of Fire. We're actually going to be talking about the Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, the making of the classic film in a couple months. And hopefully we'll be able to get the Tenutos on to talk about that. And then we've got a new book from Greg Cox. And then turn around in the new year, we've got a new book from Dayton Ward in February. So we've got...
And hopefully more.
And hopefully more, yeah. And, you know, well, I think there's nothing after Dayton's book.
So far.
It's been announced, yeah. So we'll see. But, we're just got a whole slew of new stuff coming, which is so great. And we'll keep digging into some of the old stuff. I think we actually have on deck at some point, once we have a break in new stuff, we're going to be reading the Voyager book Pathways by Jerry Taylor, who we recently lost this year in 2025. So it'll be neat to visit that one. When we actually get to that episode, we'll remind everybody where they can find the discussion about Mosaic, which was discussed a long time ago on Literary Treks. I don't remember when. I know I've read that book.
Me too.
I only know I read that because I looked at Goodreads. Because like, oh, I should read that before I read Pathways. Oh, I already did. Okay. So apparently didn't not stick with me too well. I guess not. But yeah, anyway, so a lot of good stuff coming up. But until then, Jonathan, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you?
You can find my YouTube channel at Jonathan Cohn on YouTube. My Twitter account at Jonathan Cohn, and my Goodreads at Jonathan Cohn.
Very consistent. You can find me on Goodreads and Letterboxd at Knitting Trekkie, and you can also find me on Facebook just under my name, poking around in the Babel Conference and other Star Trek places and things and book discussions. If you want to check out my blog, I've got a blog called Bookbuster Reviews. It's
B-O-O- oh, that's right.
Yeah, B-O-O-K Buster Reviews. It's like Blockbuster, but Bookbuster. Bookbusterreviews.com. I put all my book reviews out there. It's the same ones I put on Facebook and Goodreads and everything. But
and hopefully we'll have something else to announce regarding Bookbuster very soon.
Hopefully, yeah. I just got to find the time for that. I've been spending lots of time trying to get the blog kind of just situated just right so that it's easy to like post stuff there as a companion. But we'll see. But other than that, really thank you everybody for listening. And until next time, live long
and read on.
What do you call that, light reading?
To each his own, number one.